First Peter chapter 3. We'll begin reading verse 1. First Peter chapter 3. Likewise, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your beauty be the outward adorning of arranging the hair, of wearing gold, or of putting on fine apparel, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible ornament of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy men who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, as long as you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, let your prayers be not hindered. Wednesday night, we talked primarily about the first six verses or so there. And the effect that a godly wife can have even on a husband that's not a Christian. In the bigger picture, though, we are looking as well just at the character of a godly woman as described here. In the bigger picture of some of chapter 2 and first part of chapter 3, submission has been the theme, continuing here at this point. And you can only imagine, as we talk some, submission to a husband that's not a Christian can become difficult. Submission to a husband who does not care about some things said in verse 7 can be difficult. And yet, this godly character has to continue, this idea of submission. Well, submission applies to all of us, as we've seen in the earlier part there in chapter 2. Submission is something that we all have to be willing to do, and that should just be a part of our life and of our character. Wednesday night, some of the things we talked about here in these first six verses or so, with this attitude and the ability to perhaps even win a woman, win her husband to the Lord because of this character, talked about some things as dress. Modesty as far as dress is not just the idea of modesty as far as provocative or sexual, but even the idea of just drawing attention to oneself. You can dress so flamboyantly, you may have all covered, but it becomes a sight. And what Peter was trying to say is that what really should be beautiful about a woman is that which is inside. Or even as the text said, that which is hidden, that hidden person of the heart, the emphasis being on the heart. We talk some as well about chaste conduct, the idea of being pure. Chaste is the idea of purity in every aspect of behavior. Demonstrating godliness, really, consistent in that. And this is what is precious in the sight of God. We kind of ended up talking about there are two kinds of beauty described here, basically. There was outward appearance, there was inward appearance. And we talked a lot about the outward appearance and some problems there. Inward appearance, you know, really is something we could talk about just a little bit more. You know, this hidden person of the heart. And again, I'd like to see what comments you would have to make on this. The inward person, the hidden person of the heart, opposite of what is seen visually, really. And as we talk about that and kind of review at that point, again, I'd like to hear some comments from you about what is this hidden person of the heart? What would you say, and how would you describe this characteristic? What would you say, Vince?
I would say it's someone who really has a strong desire to please God. So that's where the submission, I think, is a little bit easier than, well, that's my husband, you know, so I need to submit to his authority. It's when you truly, truly desire to please God in every aspect.
And really, when we go back earlier in the letter, again, this is the idea, even from the beginning, you know, of this letter, though submission is not called out per se, it is an idea and a lifestyle of submission to God. And when we are submissive to God, then it makes, submission to government, it makes submission in other aspects of our life, submission in marriage, you know, a whole lot easier to understand and easier to deal with. because submission is a part of our lives.
He goes on there in that verse to really kind of define what this hidden person part is, somebody who has a gentle and quiet spirit. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit. A gentle and quiet spirit. What does that not mean? Yeah, well, it's not loud and boisterous. It's the opposite of that. What else does it not mean?
It's not attention getting.
It's not attention getting, all right?
Not contentious. Not contentious,
all right? Good. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's right. Okay, good. That's right. Neil?
But not so meek as to not stand up for what's right.
Okay. Sometimes when people think about a meek and quiet spirit, what might be assumed by that?
Shy.
Shy. Quiet. What?
Just a timid.
Timid, yeah.
Weakness.
Yeah.
What's that?
Being dominated, yes.
Maybe complacent.
Complacent. Why is it when we think of meekness, we think weakness? They're not the same.
Maybe.
I mean, Jesus was meek, was he not? Yeah. Moses is called Moses the Meek in text. You know, was Moses meek? No, he wasn't meek. Well, yes, he was. It says he was meek. But what I mean is, here again, we think of meekness as weakness. He was the leader of over 1 million people, the people of God. You know, that would not an easy task in any way that you look at it. There were leadership qualities that he had. He was in front of those people. He was the intermediary between those people and God. That was not something that was easy. He was not weak, and yet he was meek. Please explain that to me. How can that be?
He didn't let his position get defeated.
Yeah. He knew who he was. What else? How was Moses meek?
I've said this before. I'm not sure if this is the same Greek word used in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus says, gentle are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it is or not. But
that the word in the Sermon on the Mount that's translated meek is the same word that's used to describe
Mm-hmm.
So you have, it could be a lion or a horse or something with, you know, strength.
Yeah, tremendous power.
But it has submitted its strength to somebody else.
Mm.
And that's not that there's not strength there.
Yeah.
That strength under
container.
Control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good example. Yeah. What else?
And that strength is not just sitting there dormant. That strength is being used. An elephant has been trained. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, in a productive way. Yeah. Good. Good thoughts. And so we think again, we go back to the text that says, verse 4, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible ornament of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. I mean, we're talking about more than her appearance. Her physical appearance. Though I think that comes into some application here as well. I mean, a quiet and gentle spirit does not come across flamboyant in any way, does it? That doesn't seem to fit. Why is it now that God would find precious a woman with a gentle and quiet spirit? And why would that be effective even in trying to draw an unfaithful husband, a non-Christian, to the Lord? Why does God find this appealing first? There?
Well, if you've got somebody that's not, you're just generally quiet in general, and then they have to make some noise over something, perhaps in the name of standing up for what's right, then it's going to stand out for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to tell you something. Don't you tell her I said this. Sandra doesn't complain about much anything. I mean, I am blessed because I give her a lot to complain about. But when she finally speaks up and says something, she's a very meek and quiet spirit about her. You know that already. When she says something, when she finally just, okay, listen, we got to talk about something, I fall to my knees. You know, because, I mean, I have really messed up, or there's something really important about to come out here. I mean, it gets my attention. You know, because she's not going to complain about just anything. She's not going to just be loud about just anything. But when she says, okay, listen, there's something here we got to talk about. What? What did I do? You know, just as Daryl says, I mean, it's powerful. A meek and quiet spirit is powerful. There's got to be some more application that we can make. I mean, I see the application with women, but, I mean, Jesus was meek and has called us all to meekness in character. We can't ignore that. I know this is dealing directly here with this character of this woman. We got to consider that.
Mm-hmm. Does it need to usurp authority over a man?
If she had initially followed, I mean, you know, Adam sinned too, but it was Eve who was deceived. And don't you wonder what may have happened here if Satan had gone to Adam first? Would it have been different? You know, I don't know. Interesting thought. Makes you think about those things. Rick?
You may have talked about this in one of the previous classes, but, you know, submission.
Yeah.
God cannot force us to submit. He's given us
good point.
Can husbands force their wives to submit? The whole point of submission is doing it out of a loving and contrite and submissive heart. Bending your will to God.
Yes. Good thoughts.
This gentle and quiet spirit is endearing.
Mm-hmm.
It causes the person that you have a relationship with to be endeared to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I love these points, man. I think we're right on with these ideas.
You know, the Proverbs, a gentle answer turns away wrath.
Oh, yeah.
That's what Earl was saying.
Yeah. Powerful thoughts. It's a powerful passage. I mean, you think about here in just three or four verses, what the apostle says here regarding just the nature, the character of a godly woman, and even how she would deal with maybe one of the greatest issues or problems in her marriage, that being that she's married to someone who's not a Christian, and how to deal with that. You know, there's a lot that's talked about here in these first six verses. You know, it's very, very powerful. Mm-hmm.
And so now she finds herself, she's mm-hmm. a Christian, but she's still married to her husband who was not a Christian when they got married, mm-hmm. still is not a Christian.
And still must be submissive. That hasn't changed.
But this is in no way an endorsement of Peter to say, go out and marry, I'm not a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, but if you find yourself in that situation, mm-hmm. here's how you deal with it.
You know, in this country, we see it that way too. I mean, almost always. In every church you go to, there are more women that are faithful than men. There just seems to be. It's not as often that you find men who are faithful Christians, but their wives are not. It's usually the other way around. Isn't that something? In Africa, you know, preaching there, it's not unusual for the church to be made up of two-thirds women. Two-thirds of the church to be women. You know, with husbands that are not faithful, or husbands that are away working, that's a big issue too. But a large number of Christians who are women whose husbands are not. And so it's not unusual, again, to have questions about how do I win my husband? What must I do, you know, with my husband? Or do I have to listen to him? You know, Do I have to listen to my husband because he's not a Christian? Well, yes, you do. You still have to submit. Interesting. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, as long as you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Okay, you know, what's the point he's trying to drive home here when he says, okay, this is really nothing new. Okay, the idea of Christianity was something that was new, but there is a character here that he is calling these women to have that is not necessarily new. In former times, holy women trusted in God and adorned themselves and were submissive to their husbands. So the overall character of what's being expected by God hasn't changed. But what does it mean with that in mind? You know, Sarah obeyed Abraham, and you are like daughters of her. Really? What does that mean, do you suppose? What's he trying to tell him, Dave?
It goes back to saying that you daughters are of her seed.
Mm-hmm.
You should have obeyed that part.
Sure, you can see that. What else? So there's a figurative way in that, you know, these godly women were daughters of Sarah in a spiritual sense. What's the analogy that's being used here?
Well,
Earl?
There are certain things that just because we went from the Old Testament to the New Testament doesn't mean that they changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been wrong for someone to lie,
mm-hmm.
or to steal.
Mm-hmm. Hasn't changed that.
But you're a Christian, but that didn't change. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's an eternal principle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good points. What else? How did Sarah obey Abraham? I mean, this has got to be put here for a purpose. Why is Sarah and Abraham being the example that's held out here? Or how is Sarah being the example that's being held out here? Why? Yeah, I knew. Yeah, I'm waiting on you to answer that. I'll give you 2 minutes. We'll be to that soon. I want to hear your explanation because I don't have one for you. The idea again, just the idea of submission. You know, don't you suppose that maybe Sarah could have just wanted the nice little house on the hill and a nice place to stay and raise a family and grow old and die right there, kind of thing? What was her life? What did she have? Yeah, she had a tent and moved from place to place. Where was home anyway for Abraham and Sarah? I mean, he was following the call of God, you know, and was just always on the move looking for that promised land, you know, that God moved him from one place to another. Sarah was always there with him. You know, did she, I don't know if she ever complained about it, do you? But she just followed him wherever he went as he followed that call of God. Mm-hmm. Just interesting to think about that meek and quiet spirit.
I think nowadays, in general, everybody plans their life out, how their marriage is going to be, where they're going to live, how many kids they're going to have, the whole kid and boodle,
yeah.
And forget about the spiritual aspect. And so the wife is going to think, you know, me, I want a house like this, and I want, you're forgetting about the submission to God first.
We have this idealistic view of what life will be and what marriage will be. And too often that view does not include submission to God. Yeah, it does. Daryl.
No, I don't think we're told, but I also wonder if she was aware.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, Rick, but I wasn't going to say. I have too many witnesses. The latter part of this verse right here, whose daughters you are as long as you do good and are not afraid with any terror, is a really interesting phrase. And some explanation would be helpful, but I have none to give you. But you might have something. I don't. It just hasn't clicked with me on what exactly he's referring to there.
All
right.
He may
take advantage of me.
He may take advantage. He may be abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be.
Oh, that, Earl, that makes a lot of sense, particularly in view of where we're going.
Right. He said, you trust God in this matter. You go ahead and submit to him. Mm-hmm. And don't worry about that. If you do what God wants you to do, you don't have to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes husbands are abusive.
Mm-hmm.
They do take advantage of the fact that they're the head of home.
Mm-hmm.
That's, they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And some women have lived under the oppression of a domineering man who was unreasonable. But I think he said, don't be afraid to submit. You go ahead and do that.
Mm-hmm. Good thoughts. Good thoughts. Bless.
The idea of fearing God, if you fear God, you don't have to fear anything else, really, in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's this idea of fearing with terror. If perfect love. Fear God, then there's only so much man can do to you. You know, you can't, they can kill people, you can be abused, you know, all kinds of bad things can happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's judgments to be made regarding the situation that you might be in.
Mm-hmm.
And there are perhaps exceptions to the rule, you know, regarding someone who fears for their life.
Yeah, you know, right, right.
The New International Version, it says, you're the daughters of Sarah if you do right and do not give in to fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So basically,
it goes on. Yeah, yeah.
Less said.
That's right. Good thoughts. There's something interesting here when we look at verse 7. And I've heard some people say, it's interesting how Peter said six verses worth of instruction to women, only one verse to men. What's up with that? Well, what's up with that is answered in the first word of verse 7. What do I mean by that?
Likewise, the same as instructed women.
Likewise. Yeah. You know, first six verses are not just written to women. Well, yes, I know specifically here's instruction to women, talking about, you know, character and different things such as that. But likewise, you men.
The same goes for you.
The same goes for you. You know what? There's application here out of this that is made, that you have to make as well. I mean, remember, half of chapter 2 was specifically about submission. And really, the whole letter, to some degree, is about submission to God. You know, ultimately, is what it's about. Likewise, he says. All of these points here that's been made so over, likewise, you. And so I'm kind of looking at it as, yeah, there's like these six verses that kind of looks like it's kind of focusing on women. Well, there's those character aspects here that can be applied to men are applied to men as well. But to men, I also have some more to say to you. So there's more to be said to the men here. It's the way I'm viewing this. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. So, what is the admonition given to husbands here? What do you see?
In addition to your living this good life, you also have considerate of your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Because quite frankly, if you're not, God's not going to listen to your prayers.
Yeah, yet. This gets serious here. If you're concerned about a relationship with God, you better have a good relationship with your wife. You better deal with her and dwell with her with understanding. What does that mean? Now, if it means, men, if that means we have to always understand our wife, we are in trouble. That part I've got figured out. Don't say I said that. What does it mean? Okay.
Limitations to understand her. I think the
hole's getting deeper, Rick. Just what I'm sharing.
Is this being recorded? I'll be sure she gets it.
It was, but it's not now. Dwell with them with understanding. What do we need to understand? Look, particularly in view of what's been said here so far. How are we to understand our wives? What do we expect them to be?
It took me about 30 years, but really to understand that my wife is different. She's.
It took you 30 years to figure that out.
It really did. I've been married 37 years. It really took me a long, long time to realize Kathy emotionally, and physically, and women see things differently too. Mm-hmm. And you would think raising four daughters that I would have recognized that early too, but.
Well, you were beaten down, Vince, so it's taken a while to get back.
It's recognizing that they are different. Not inferior, but they are different, and they see things differently than men do.
What are some things here that we need, in view of the text? Let's take it just in context here. What are some things that we need to understand about the character of our wives? The verses prior. What are we needing to see? What should we be trying to encourage our wives to be in character?
Holy before God.
Holy? Holy? What else? In the text, what else?
Gentle and quiet.
Gentle and quiet. What else?
To be in subjection and to hinder that in your life.
We should be trying to encourage that. You can't mandate that. You can't demand that. I mean that, but to encourage that quiet and gentle spirit. You know, I think we've lost that a lot in our society. Yeah, that yes. So it worked. Okay. Keep that in mind. How can husbands encourage their wives to have a gentle and quiet spirit? Why has that changed in our society? What are some reasons that has changed? At least in my view, it seems like it's changed in our society. Women do not aspire to have a gentle and quiet spirit.
Well, society basically said that men and women are identical, that there are really no differences between men and women,
yeah.
and ignoring the physiological and physical and all the other differences that they do.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was a young boy, and I could tell there was differences. That's never changed. You know, there are differences between boys and girls, and that's okay. You know, physically and emotionally, there's differences.
The concept of meek and weak.
Mm-hmm.
Today's concept is that if you're not loud, boisterous, self-centered,
then you're weak.
Then you're weak.
And women have to overcome that to find their place in the world. Mm-hmm.
Translations.
Yeah.
Knowledge signifies a general intelligence and understanding, general knowledge of Christian religion, mm-hmm. the deeper, more perfect, and enlarged knowledge of this religion, such as belonging
and shouldn't we value that? I mean, it's a redundant question, I suppose, rhetorical question. If God says it's important, which he has, then of course we should value that. It has value because God said so, you know, that in that relationship. Something's not in alignment. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. No.
God created woman to be a helpmate to man, and that's to complement that other side.
Sure.
And you can see the difference is to complement him if she's doing it right, and vice versa.
Sure. Sure. Good thoughts. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife. Honor. What's the idea of honor?
Respect.
Value. Hold her up as something that's special. Giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel. Well, that has always been kind of an interesting and debatable kind of phrase among some. What's the idea here of weaker vessel? Or what are some ideas that some have proposed here of weaker vessel?
Well, the idea that's been proposed a lot, I think, probably dominant theme is the idea of in a home, there you may have all kinds of vessels. You might have a sort of thick pot that you use every day for cooking or use every day. But the weaker vessel,
doesn't mean that there's no strength, but something that is different.
If you have a vase that's hundreds of years old, it's very fragile, but it's very valuable. Just because it's fragile doesn't mean that it's not valuable.
Good thoughts, good points here. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. How do you read the last part of that text? As being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. What are the consequences here if a husband does not honor his wife? Isn't that what it's talking about, Earl?
Well, the woman is not as, generally speaking, is not as strong as the man physically. That's generally the case. But don't get the idea that because she's not as strong as you are physically, that she is somehow inferior to you intellectually or spiritually. Mm-hmm. Because she's not. Because she is a fellow heir of grace and life.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritually, she's on the same
level plane.
There's no difference.
Yeah.
And you need to recognize that fact, because if you don't, you're very
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Thoughts, y'all? Other comments?
To remind me of Galatians 3, you know, whereas those who are baptized are put in Christ, it says there's neither Jew nor Greek, nor slave nor free,
nor male nor female. Yeah.
And I think it's difficult for us in our generation to appreciate how liberating that was, that phrase is. For women throughout time, is that because, you know, there is historically at that time and earlier, women were almost like possessions, you know, of men. And this kind of thing here is just is an extraordinary Christianity, Jesus particularly, liberated. Spiritual way of women in a way that historically changed everything. And not in that I'm using that word liberated, not in the same way that feminism in this country has come to be.
Mm-hmm. And will be judged the same way. That's right. Same salvation.
That verse is, but we are all one in Christ Jesus. And that kind of goes as fellow heirs of the grace of life. We're all working together for the same goal, whether we are Jews or Greeks or slave or free or male or female. Not that we're individually separately equal, but we're all working together for the same end.
Good thoughts. That was a powerful passage. I enjoyed spending a little bit extra time on that one. Kind of talking through some of those points.